Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Welcome to Bear and Balance. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined by the boss of that fine website, Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. Lester, the Bears are no longer on a losing streak. They get off the schneid against the winless Lions on Thanksgiving Day. We've had a couple days to eat leftovers and eat turkey and pie and all that kind of stuff to kind of digest this game as well. So how was the holidays and how was that game for you?
The holiday was good. I actually had Thanksgiving on the Friday. So my Thanksgiving meal was actually chili cheese dogs. It was pretty good, actually.
That seems okay.
I'll take it. Football and chili cheese dogs all day by myself. So it was okay.
Yeah. So the Bears are able to stop this 5-game losing skid. And I'm not surprised about anything that happens in Bears fandom anymore, but the amount of just like anger at a win was very interesting. Twitter, Bears fans just so angry that second field goal. And I think they're winless Lions and they had to go down to the last second field goal. Well, okay, but it's the NFL. They're all professional football players. They took the Steelers to overtime and tied them. They lost on a last second field goal to the Ravens. And they should a 65-yard field goal, right? Like the Lions should have been able to hold on to that game. They were in the game against the Browns. They were, yes, they are a bad football team, but they are not a team that is just rolling over and dying. And the Bears did what a lot of these other teams have done against the Lions is they got drugged down. They played a tough game against them and they escaped with the W. And so at the end of the day, in my opinion, a win is a win and you just move on. But a lot of people want style points. Where are you at with style points in football games in the NFL?
It's all about the W. And then like for me as a fan, I'm never going to cheer for my team to lose. If they lose and the big picture, it's better for the big picture. I can appreciate that for sure. But the way I look at it is whether I actively want them to lose or not, it's not going to affect what happens on the field. Right. So why would I put myself through wanting to see my favorite team lose a game? And then let's say they win the game. Now, am I mad because they won? Am I upset? It's just a weird thing for a fan. So I always cheer for the wins. And if it's a loss, and like I said, the big picture means that, Nagy's fired or the draft pick is better, I'm fine with it. But as far as style points, come on, it's football. It's, there are plenty of games where the team you're cheering for, wins when they shouldn't or they lose when they shouldn't. So who cares about style? Just get the W. It's all that matters.
Yeah, someone on Twitter today responded that they were lamenting a couple of wins late last year that meant that we had to give up a bunch of draft capital to move up to get Justin Fields. And I said, the reality is that the Bears would have traded draft capital to move up to get Justin Fields, even if they were higher in last year's draft anyway, right?
Yeah.
He slid to 11. If the Bears were sitting at 11 for that draft, they would have traded draft capital to get up to 7 or 6 or something to get him. It was just an amazing set of circumstances that the Bears were able to get him at 11. But I don't think that you can play it like that. I think it's much easier to just say, this is my favorite team. If I'm going to sit down and watch this game, I'm going to cheer for them to win. If they lose and that somehow helps the Bears long-term or whatever, then I can be comforted by that. But if I'm going to watch this game, I'm going to cheer for them to win. And I'm going to cheer for the young players. I'm going to cheer for, there's always something to cheer for. I'm going to cheer for this record. I'm going to cheer for this guy to try to get to 1,000 yards. Whatever it is, you find what you're cheering for. But to turn on the game and cheer for your favorite team to lose, that's not my bag.
Yeah, it's very strange. There was a lot of fire Nagy chants going on, like all through Chicago. And then today, Bojack came out and said that, don't boo us. Don't chant fire Nagy at the coach. It's not good for the whole team. And I kind of agree with that because, like, I've never went to a game myself and, like, actively booed and jeered, you know, my team. You know, if they're doing something bad, I don't like, I just don't cheer. I just sit there and I'll be pissed off to myself. And you know, I'm sure I'll drop a few F bombs to the guys next to me, but I'm not going to like chant, you know, fire this guy or this guy sucks. That's my team. I just can't do it myself, but everyone fans how they want to fan. So.
Yeah. It's an interesting perspective. I'm not a booing guy of your own team. I'll boo the other team. I mean, down with that, but
heckle, jeer, yeah, trash talk.
That's all part of the fun. But you know, I was at a Vikings game I got a buddy who's a Vikings fan, and I went to a Vikings game. We went to see Vikings Saints a couple years ago. I wanted to see Drew Brees. I ended up being able to see him in Minnesota. And then I got tickets down in the Superdome like the next week. It was really cool to see Brees play. And I was able to get a chant going to try to fire Zimmer. And I felt really, that was really fun, but clearly I was a plant and my buddy was not happy with me. He was pushing me like, you gotta stop this. But the whole section like got into it, like, cause they were very mad at him at the time. So pretty funny.
Were you wearing Bears gear at the time or what were you wearing? Saints gear?
No, I wore neutral gear. I have a shirt from the Pro Football Hall of Fame that I got when I visited there a couple years ago. So I just wore my Canton.
You're like shirt. Rob Lowe wearing the NFL.
Yeah, just the NFL is exactly what that was.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was worth it. It was fun. Well, let's get into the categories for this game. So we start off every episode with the trench tribute. So one guy on the offensive or defensive line that we want to highlight. So it is your turn to go first this week. So who did you want to highlight?
You know, there are a few guys I kind of went with this week, but I wanted to pick a guy that we haven't talked about in a few weeks. That's Angelo Blackson. You know, I rewatched the game and he seemed to be active. He was in the mix on a lot of plays. He only had one tackle and one quarterback hit, but he was in the Lions backfield quite a bit. He drew a hold. And just his overall game, I think he's 29 years old and he signed a 2-year deal, but he looks like, is this who he has been his whole career? Cause if it is, it's kind of weird that the Bears got him for the deal they did. Cause like I said, he has really good hands, really active, nice first step. He plays with power, a good pad level. He's a guy that, you know, he's going to be around for the Bears off 2 years now, but if Hicks is gone, and I hope it doesn't happen, you know, I can see them just sliding him in there and just, you know, he won't be at that level. You know, but, you know, he'll be able to hold his own in there. And I think Blackson had a really nice game this week.
Yeah, Blackson, one of those guys that we talked about it at camp, the new guy, not a guy that I knew a lot about. And just, who's that guy? Evangelo Blackson. Oh, okay. Yeah. He looks pretty good.
There's high just motor. Certain
guys. Yeah. You just like, he sticks out. Like, this guy's going to be a guy that can get into the rotation. Yeah, I noticed him flashing as well, too. I wanted to talk about Robert Quinn again. I know we talked about him a lot in this space, but I want to bring him up again. He deserves it. Without Mac, you know, and Hicks banged up, Quinn's really, you know, the best player on that defensive line, but he's also having an incredible season and recorded another sack. He had 5 tackles, including another tackle for loss. And so he's doing it everywhere. He just got highlighted by Brandon Thorne in Brandon Thorne's Substack. If you're not following Brandon Thorne, he's obviously a good person to follow if you like offensive and defensive line. He does a lot of very interesting stuff, and he speaks with knowledge about both lines. And he is now he's got 6 games remaining, and he really has a legitimate chance to threaten Richard Dent's franchise record of 17 and a half sacks. Now, I mean, he's got to chase down Kyler Murray. He's got to, you know, try to get to Aaron Rodgers. Like, yeah, okay. Like, maybe he's not going to find as much success against some of these better teams and that may not be throwing as much because they're salting away leads, but he has a legitimate chance at that record. And that is something that no one would have predicted coming into this year, given how bad he looked last year with that foot injury. So I think it's great. Like I love any kind of franchise record stuff. Bring it on. Like I'd love to have something to cheer for. And let's see if Robert Quinn can try to challenge Richard Dent's franchise record.
It's funny. You look at when you played last year, everyone talked about the money, but if he would have been doing this last year, the money would not be an issue at all. And then like, if he's doing this moving forward, I mean, that's like a bargain then if you look at the money. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, he's 31 now, I believe. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be a drop off at some point, but he looks really good right now.
One of the things that Brandon Thorne brings up is that you like to pair a speed rusher, which is what Quinn is, with a power rusher, which is what more Mac is. Mac can kind of do everything because he's sort of Superman, but he definitely is more of a power guy. And if you have a speed guy on one side and a power guy on the other, that they can create some interesting, you know, challenges for quarterbacks, because if they're both winning on their rush, it's much more guaranteed to get a sack, because the quarterback doesn't have anywhere to go. He can't run out of the pocket because the speed guy's, you know, coming around the back, and he can't step up in the pocket because that power guy's coming in and hitting him, you know, at that depth. And so, you know, Ryan Pace takes a lot of crap, and deservedly so, for how he's managed capital, how he's managed a lot of things with the quarterback position, you know, everything. And I've been leading the Ryan Pace charge for a very long time. But when they signed Robert Quinn, I was pretty excited because I could see a plan. And when I can see a plan, even if I don't always agree with the plan, this one I thought was a good plan, but like, oh, this is exciting. There's a plan here. This makes sense because it's fitting with a piece that you already have. It's protecting your best asset by creating something that, you know, you're going to build a strength on. And so you can kind of see now what Ryan Pace was trying to do when he brought Robert Quinn in here.
There are other issues with that defense, but the pass rush right now is not one of them. That's even with Mac out. So it's a good problem to have, I guess, for the Bears to have a guy that's, you know, making pretty good money, but he's still highly productive.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to the tweets. So what on the hellscape of Twitter caught your eye after this Bears win?
So it's actually a couple of days after that, but with this week actually opens up the third week for the Tevin Jenkins practice window. So the Bears have to make a decision at the end of this week's practice. Are they going to activate him from IR? And if not, then he goes to IR for the rest of the season. So I got a feeling he is going to play. He looks pretty good in those clips they're showing on whether it's the hill or at the field. You know, he looks like he's pretty close to being back. So I think he's back. So I had a tweet about that. And then at Bears Twitter, and then it's Twitter with the TW, the number one Twitter. So that's kind of how this guy got that. But that's a cool handle. At Bears Twitter said, if he starts, meaning Jenkins, it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do with the rest of the line. Move Cody back to center, Peters to left guard, or just kind of ease Jenkins in and let Peters take over after a few snaps. And I know we've talked a little bit before, you know, there is one weak link on the line, and that's probably Sam Mustipher at center. And I do think Sam played a pretty good game against the Lions, but the Lions do not have a very good defensive line. They don't have a big hulking nose tackle that he has to deal with. So if the Bears do look at the entire line and what they've done, and you know, through the whole Metnagy era, is they want to start their best five, no matter who it is, how it is, they work to get their best five in. And if that's the case, and if Jenkins is healthy, you got to feel he's part of the best five.
Mm-hmm.
So does Mustipher go to the bench, and do you put Cody at center? Do you put Daniels at center? What would you do?
I would like to see what Daniels has at center.
Yeah.
That's what I would like to do. The problem is you put two rookies on the right side, and I could see them having some issues with that. So that's my only concern. I think ideally I would like to see Daniels audition for center to see if you already have that in house. Because you're going to have to address the center position next year. Whitehair, you know, he can do it. And I think that's probably the more safe bet for them, that they think that they can just kind of slide him down, but he's obviously not had a very good year either. I'm curious if we're going to learn after the season, if he's battling an injury himself or something. Cause he just has not looked, he's fallen off. His play has fallen off. And so it will be interesting to see if anything comes of that, but I would prefer to slide Daniels down, but I can understand it if they want to kind of separate the rookies so they have veterans between them.
Yeah. With Jenkins, he's been working at left and right tackle so far the last couple of weeks. You know, I think they're confident in Larry Borum at right tackle, you know, but again, if you got to play Jenkins, you know, he was your second draft pick. You know, he's the guy you got to, you know, do something to accommodate. So if you are going to move someone, you know, maybe you do kick Borum inside, or maybe Peters, who's a veteran who, did play guard last year in Philly, you know, before they had their injuries and that forced him to go back to left tackle. So at his age, you know, he was ready to play guard last year. So maybe at this point in his career, he'll play guard. So it's definitely a nice problem to have. The Bears' O-line is getting healthier. The pass pro this last week was better than it has been. So maybe they're starting to gel. And if that's the case, do you want to make any move at all? It's just weird.
That's the other thing is, do you want to actually make a move or do you want to say it's a redshirt year? You're here unless we have to put you in because somebody gets hurt down the home stretch. But yeah, it is interesting. It's an interesting little nugget here for the last 6 weeks to see what will happen, because we all want to see what he looks like if he's healthy and ready and mentally there and all that kind of stuff. And I want to push him if he's not physically or mentally ready, but we all want to see what he looks like. But what's a few games of reps at a position that he's not going to play next year? What is, you know, are you going to throw him out at left? Yeah. Right. I mean, what is it going to happen? So that is a interesting closing storyline for this 2021 season. So my tweet is from Ran Sankaran. I'm sorry if I am mispronouncing names, at Ol Bankar. He says, I'm not as obsessed with the head coach play caller with young quarterback model as others. Bears have done it twice recently, hasn't worked. When it works, it's great, but it often doesn't. We forget too soon about the Dirk Cotters of the world. Note that best two Bears coaches in the last 40 years were a special teams wide receivers coach and a defensive coordinator in terms of their background. So I brought this up because right now everybody has obviously fired Matt Nagy in their head, and they're already looking for Matt Nagy's replacement on what is out there. And the most popular selection for the majority of fans are these offensive coordinators to bring in and work with Justin Fields. And so that is a model that I think most people feel comfortable with making. And Rahm's making the statement that that hasn't worked for the Bears in the past. And so maybe you try something different. And I'm sort of the mind that it's still the best option to bring in an offensive mind to make sure that you're building around Justin Fields, but that there are other options, right? That, you know, the Chargers brought in Brandon Staley and he recruited somebody, Joe Lombardi, to coach Justin Herbert, who's a young quarterback, you know, entering his second year. So it's not like that's the only model that's out there, but it is the model that we are sort of hyper focused on in a lot of ways in the Bears Twitter circles or in the Bears article circles, is focusing on that offensive mind. But wanted to kind of get your take on that as well.
You know, of all the young OC guys, there's a lot out there. But it's hard to know. It's hard to know if these guys have what it takes to be the leader of an entire organization. And that's what you are. You're the face of the franchise. You know, you're the voice. You know, it's your show. So it's hard to know if they're going to make that jump. So if you look at guys that maybe have a different kind of background, you know, you look at a guy like Todd Bowles, who was a head coach with the Jets for a few years. He had some success. And then, you know, that was when he was there, that was just kind of a train wreck franchise, and kind of that's how it went. And I think he's one of these guys that could probably get a second chance and will have more success the second time through. I know Bill Belichick did it. You know, he was a Browns coach way back when. Of course, everyone thought he was a bust. His next gig, of course, he does get Tom Brady, but now we're seeing this year, hey, this guy can coach. You know, it wasn't just Brady. He's pretty good too. So, you know, if you look at a guy that has done it like that, and then a guy like Dave Tobe also, it's really weird to me how he's always passed over when he's always a guy that's mentioned. You know, people that are in the know, the insiders, they all rave about him, but he either doesn't get enough interviews or, I mean, obviously he's always passed over, you know, but you hear about the special teams coaches, and there's a guy that worked with the entire locker room, you know? So, you know, when you look at a guy that has the respect of the whole team, it's often to not going to be this guy who does special teams. And Tobe's a guy that, you know, I can't see the Bears doing it. I just don't think they'll do something like that. But I would not be mad if they went after a guy like Tobe.
Yeah, it's interesting. It just, the first question is, what are you going to do to develop Justin Fields?
Yep.
Right. That has to be the first question.
What's the plan?
That
yep.
Anybody asks, what's your plan? And if he sells you on the plan, then that's, I can respect it. Because if you're looking for that leader and you feel like that's the way that you're going to do it, you like that mentality. I mean, John Harbaugh is a heck of a coach, right? Yeah. And so he came from that special teams background. That's why I bring him up. And so that's not a bad model. It just doesn't happen that often. And, you know, we can debate how good of a coach Mike Ditka was for the Bears, you know, relative to the talent level that he was given with the Jim Finks drafts. But, you know, that's another podcast for another time. But it is interesting. It will be obviously the dominant storyline of what we're going to be talking about in the offseason is which direction they're going to go. And that story is going to be very important for offseason content and fodder. And we will, you know, make a lot out of the choice that's made. But right now, it is worth just noting that there are more than just the hot offensive coordinators that we need to consider for this gig. So let's move on to stats. What number did you pull for the caught up in a numbers game, the stat week?
The number that kind of caught my eye this week was 69. And it was because the Bears had two scoring drives of 69 yards. The first one was in the second quarter. It was just took two plays. It was the big Dalton to Mooney, a 52-yard pass play, followed up by the Jimmy Graham touchdown down the seam for 17 yards, 69 yards, two plays. And then in the fourth quarter, it was actually the longest drive, which was 18 plays in the last 8 years, according to the Fox broadcast.
Holy moly.
And that takes us back to the Mark Trestman era. It's the last time the Bears had a touchdown drive that went at least 18 plays. So fourth quarter, they iced away 8 minutes and 30 seconds of the clock. So that was a great drive by Andy Dalton, engineered that drive. Obviously, there were some nice plays in that drive that he made with his feet, with his arm. Obviously, the Demo did some stuff on the ground as well. So it's just an interesting way to look at two different drives, Dalton going downfield with one, and the second one more of a dink and dunk. But it was nice to see the full package from Andy Dalton.
Yeah, and a nice stat for the week. Nice. Excellent. Very nice. All right, mine is the number 17. So that's the number of 1,000-yard receiving seasons in Chicago Bears franchise history.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
It's a very sad number. That is absolutely true. And what's even crazier is you think, oh, well, 17 years they had. Well, actually, they doubled up a couple times. It's actually not even 17 seasons. It's like there were a couple times they had 2,000-yard receivers. Anyway,
I bet if I think about it, we can name them all. I know there's Jeffrey, a couple.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall had a couple.
Okay. Jeffrey, Marshall.
Harlan Hill. Kavanaugh, too. Yeah. Jeff Graham, Wendell Davis.
I don't
Davis.
Think Kavanaugh ever had one. Oh, that's a little early.
Damn it. Okay.
Yeah, that's in the 40s.
Oh, man. Who else? So
Graham
who else
and Conway.
Conway got one.
Mm-hmm. And Marcus Robinson.
Oh, the 1,400 yards. Yeah.
And then Allen Robinson.
Allen Robinson, of course. And that's a terrible stat. 17. Like if I would have guessed, I would have guessed much higher.
Right.
But then when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, I can't think of all those guys.
It's tough.
I'm going to go to Pro Football Focus now. Pro Football Reference to check those out. I want to see those.
Booker has a couple. All right. So Darnell Mooney, that's where this is going. Darnell Mooney with his back-to-back 100-yard games is now in a position to make it 18. So he has 694 yards on the season. So if he can stay healthy, he should be able to clear that mark without too much issue here. It's only a little over 300 yards with the last six games. So Darnell Mooney is now on pace for a 1,000-yard receiving season, which is incredibly rare for this franchise. So that is another thing to cheer for.
There's always something, you know, as a Bears fan, we can always find something to cheer for as a fan. So that's good.
Yeah. These are blue moon statistics here.
Yeah, I
mean, it just does not happen very often. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And on the other side of this, we'll do everybody's favorite segment, the Three Bears.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury. not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Lester, we're back. So let's talk about the three bears. So hot bowl of porridge. Who did you want to single out as having a particularly good game in this amazing 16-14 win?
You talked to him on the top of the show, but that's Robert Quinn. Five tackles, another sack, another tackle for loss. I believe he is, I think, third in the league in sacks. I believe he is sixth or seventh in the league in tackles for loss. So, and then the way those stat works, you know, tackle for loss is not a sack.
Right.
A quarterback hit is a sack. I don't understand some of the rules that the NFL has for their stats, but I think those all should be completely separate stats myself, but it is what it is. But he's doing it all. He's doing it against the run, doing it against the pass. You know, he is just, he plays with a high motor, and it shows you that what last year was such the outlier. That's not who he is. And, you know, you can sense his frustration the whole season. You sensed it during the beginning of training camp because he was hurt a little bit into camp too. And then now that he's playing really good for the Bears, you see he also has a frustration when the Bears were getting beat by a bunch of points in five straight games. So his frustration poured out there as well. So he's a really passionate guy. He wants to do well. And, you know, he may not get his career best, I think it's 19 sacks, but who knows? I mean, he might get it with the 17th game on the schedule. Robert Quinn could push for that record. And then, or at least the very least, like you said, he'll push for Dent's record.
Yeah. Which is just really cool and fascinating. And I'm all for it. It'd be nice if he could, I thought if he could stack a couple against the Lions, then he would really be talking. He did get the one, which is great, but you know, it'd be nice if he could get one of those multi-sack games again here just to give himself a legitimate shot. But you know, again, storylines to look for in the last stretch of the season. That's what I'm all about. So, you know, watching that, I wanted to highlight Jalen Johnson.
Nice.
I thought he played excellent football once again. I know the degree of difficulty against the Lions wide receivers is pretty low. You can't get much lower than the Lions wide receivers, but this is more of a body of work for me, but he just stood out again. Excellent play. He had a forced fumble. And it just that he just looked locked down in coverage. And for the most part, he's been really good this year. One of the best corners of the league. I don't know if he's going to get recognized for it because the Bears defense isn't very good overall. And the Bears team isn't very good overall. And so generally that sort of stuff falls by the wayside. Those postseason honors fall by the wayside, but he is really good. He's a young player. This is a guy that you can build around. So I wanted to highlight Jalen tonight.
I think Jalen Johnson needs a few more interceptions because that's one of those Pro Bowl, All Pro things. You know, it's one of those positions where that you need the numbers. You know, he could have a really good pass rating against, but that's not really a stat that people really look at when they vote. So he needs some more picks. And if he gets that, I think he will get recognized.
Yeah, absolutely. Flip it around. Who did you want to highlight as having a cold bowl of porridge?
It wasn't necessarily the Bears game, but But Elijah Wilkinson, for the third time this year, was placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. The first two were due to a close contact. This time it was reported from CBS Sports that he had a positive test. And, you know, with Jenkins activated, Jermaine Ifedi could be activated soon. You know, he's on IR now with the knee injury, but they just said it wasn't season ending. So, you know, Elijah Wilkinson may be doing some stuff here. Again, it may not be his fault, but he may be doing some stuff here to get himself pushed off the roster. What's the little quote? Availability. The most important thing is availability. Mm-hmm. And if he's on the list again, if he can't play this week, at some point you got to look at your room for the old line there and say, well, Wilkinson's not doing enough for us. Jenkins is back. If Eddie's back soon, hit the bricks.
Hit the bricks, pal. There's a great series on YouTube of Herm Edwards talking to the Rookie Symposium years and years ago. I don't know when it came out. I've watched it a number of times because it's got a lot of good just life lessons and you know, just if you have a full-time job, if you're working a career, you should watch that YouTube series. You know, it's like it's one video and they cut it up into like multiple parts, like three or four parts. And he in that says, like, are you coachable? Are you available? Right? Like that. That's what he says all the time. If you're in the training room, you're not available. You know, and he says that's, you know, incredibly important. So showing up, you know, it translates all into whatever job that you have. I would encourage you to go out and seek that particular YouTube clip because I don't know. I've gotten a lot out of it. And Herm does a really good job there, but he mentions that. For my cold bowl of porridge, I wanted to talk about David Montgomery and the running game, because coming into this, I thought should have some success. 17 carries for 46 yards is a 2.7 yard average. That is not very good. Khalil Herbert, 4 carries for 9 yards. That is also not very good. Just nothing happening in this running game. We talked about how on Bears Over Beers for the preview, we talked about how the Lions had some good defensive linemen, but you know, there's just no excuse for 2.7 yards per carry. And so this running game really needs to get stuff figured out down the stretch here if they want to have a chance in any of these games, because they're going to play much better defenses overall. And having the ability to keep your defense fresh starts with being able to run the ball. And so I was really disappointed in what Montgomery was able to put up in this one.
You know, part of it was the Lions really tried to take away the run game, but also I think that this game kind of lended itself to do a more outside zone, which is where Khalil Herbert shines a little more. And I almost put Herbert as my cold bowl of porridge this week, not because of him, but because of his lack of touches. You know, he had a lot of success, you know, as the fill-in for Montgomery. And then since Montgomery's been back, and of course, Montgomery is a better player overall. He's better in pass pro, which is key for that position, you know, but Herbert's touches have gone way down. So, you know, I'm like you, I was hoping the run game would have done more. And, you know, maybe that's partly why Dalton was able to push the ball downfield, because they were packing stuff inside trying to stop it. But again, he only scored 16 points.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, man, it's like, what the hell is the offense doing? So weird.
The Lions defense got what they wanted. It was one of those, like, they held the team to under 20 points.
Yeah.
Like, this was one of those things where, you know, the Bears have lost these games and the defense holds the opposing team to, you know, 17 points. And it's like, it's not the defense's fault. They did their job. I mean, in modern NFL, if you're keeping the opponent to less than 20, I mean, geez. But all right, let's move on to the last bowl of porridge, the one that's just right. Who did you want to highlight for that?
For me, I'm going wide receiver, Damier Byrd. He had 4 catches, 41 yards. He picked up some of the slack when Marquise Goodwin got injured. He had, like, I think 60 catches last year for the Patriots. And it was high volume because the Patriots offense was bad last year. The receivers were bad last year. So he was force-fed the ball a lot. But I thought he would bring more to the offense for Chicago this year. He's a legit 4.3 speed guy. So 4 catches, 41 yards. You're thinking that's not that big a deal. But for him, I think that's right where he should be. He's the number 3 receiver. If he can put those type of numbers up each week and stretch the defense a little bit, you know, make some nice catches to keep the chains moving. That's what you want on a guy like that. And I think Damier Byrd should have a nice finish to the season, whether it's Dalton or Fields at quarterback rest of the way.
Yeah, who knows with what Allen Robinson and all that stuff's going on, how much he's going to play down the stretch here. But yeah, if he doesn't, then Bird will get a little more play, or if Goodwin's out, then he'll get more play. I actually went with the other end of that. I went with Andy Dalton as the just right. And people are like, oh, he had a good game. No, he really didn't. He was 24 for 39, 317 yards, one touchdown, one interception. That comes out to an 85 quarterback rating.
It was a red zone pick too.
Fine. Yes, red zone pick. That's fine for a veteran backup quarterback that comes in and makes a spot start against one of the worst defenses in the league. It's fine. He did what he had to do to win the game. And so I'm giving him credit for that. He got over 300 yards. I'm giving him credit for that. But this was not a good game. This was a fine game. It was just fine from Andy Dalton. It's what you'd expect a guy to be able to come in and do. So I'm just highlighting it as it was fine. That'll do. That'll do, Andy. That'll you got do. The win.
You know, this is who he is. I mean, this is the kind of, this is the kind of play you expect from him. He's smart with the ball. He's efficient, smart for the most part. He's smart. The interception was just bad. It was a bad decision on his part. You know, if he had a bit more loft on it, would have been a touchdown, you know, but in that point of the game, he probably should have just not thrown it there. He's quick enough to get some yards with his feet. He can move around the pocket. He was only sacked once. I thought he helped the pass pro quite a bit by getting the ball out quick, by moving a little bit to the side. So it's funny if you watch Twitter, and like during the game, I like to kind of have my eye on Twitter. The first part of the game, people were taking victory laps. Oh, Andy Dalton sucks. I told you guys. And then as the game starts going on, he starts heating up a little bit. And then the other guys come out. Oh, Andy Dalton's great. I told you guys. It was just weird how one game you get both the pro and the guys that hate him, they're both there going at it. It's like, this is who he is. He's average. He's okay. Yeah. Just wait a while. If he's good now, give it a minute. If he sucks now, give it a minute. So this is who
it's
he
like
is.
Like weather in the Midwest, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't like it, just wait a few minutes. Well, let's end with the Fields report, which, you know, it's not a Fields report because he didn't play. But I wanted to bring up a different report that involved Justin Fields this last week. And that is that there was a report or rumor or something that came out that George McCaskey made the call to Matt Nagy that said, you will start Justin Fields. And I think that you and I had the, you know, okay, like let's take this with a giant mountain of salt. Like we don't have any real evidence to suggest that this is what happened. And there's a lot of interesting maneuvering that's going on in the last week with Nagy and people in the front office and random reporters that never have any Bears news that had some Bears news. And, you know, so you don't really know exactly what the motivations are of these people that are coming out and saying these things and, you know, sources behind the scenes. But I wanted to get your reaction to that idea of ownership coming in and making a call like that, and what your reaction was when you first read it.
When I first read it, I mean, it came from a guy who's usually pretty good with some of the source stuff. That was Hub, right? I believe it was Hub Arkish. And he usually has some pretty decent, some of his football takes are out there.
Right.
But as far as the stuff he gets that he claims are sourced information, it's usually pretty solid. So again, when it comes to these guys that get sources, I'm not saying that they're making things up. That this doesn't seem like Hub's the guy that makes them up. I'm sure someone told him this, that he trusts within House Hall. It could have been a board member. You know, who knows who it was, but I'm sure he got some information he felt was good information. He passed it along. But for me, if that's the case, if your owner is making football on the field in the season decisions, that's terrible. I've thought George McCaskey is a boob from the start because he doesn't know what he's doing. And if he's really making those types of decisions, if he decided to bring back Pace and Nagy, and now he's gonna tell them how to do their job, then he's basically admitting, I screwed up. I shouldn't have brought back Pace and Nagy.
Yeah, my response on Twitter, I said, basically, my response, which I know is not the most reasoned, is that scene from Dumb and Dumber where the Jim Carrey's character sells the shaggin' wagon for like the moped, and Jeff Daniels says, just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, yeah, you do something like this. and totally redeem yourself. Yeah, wow. Because I was like, well, that's the right call. Like the right call is to play Justin Fields. And so I didn't really give any, I have no idea if it's true. Maybe George McCaskey believes that's true, right? Like maybe he said, no, you guys got to be playing Fields. And Nagy's like, yeah, we're going to, but he's not ready yet. And then there was the injury and then it just sort of happened. Like there's a lot of things that could have been happening behind the scenes. And maybe McCaskey believes it, or he was telling people like, hey, I'm going to put my foot down. Whatever it is, you don't know exactly what the sourcing is. McCaskey might believe that that's what happened. My reaction was that was the right move. So like, whatever, but generally we don't really want the owners meddling in team affairs. That's why you hire these guys. And like you said, you brought these guys back. You brought these guys back and you supposedly pushed them to say like, go get the quarterback position figured out. And they do that. And that you kind of have to trust them to make those calls. Even if you don't agree with it, you're going to have to try to trust the process or whatever. But I don't know. I thought it was funny to just kind of think about this, you know, George McCaskey thinking that he's making this grand decision, or is he just trying to look better in the eyes of fans and it backfires? Because he's hearing everything that, oh, we want to see Fields. Hey, by the way, that was me. And the people are like, no, you can't do that. Yeah. Why not? So I don't know. I thought the whole thing was pretty interesting.
You know, it's funny because like I was always one of the guys that wasn't ready to see Fields from day one. I wanted to see Fields once he understood the pass protection. And I don't think he was quite ready to go against the Rams the first week. And then we saw when he was forced to start, he was taking some sacks he shouldn't have took. And, you know, I think I had him down for 6 sacks that he was responsible for. That was up to the Packers game. But the Packers game on, I think there were 2 games there. All the sacks he took, none were on him. So was that him learning on the job? Was that him getting better? Is that maybe an instance where if he would have had some more time to sit and learn and understand the process of pass pro, you know, through being the practice squad quarterback, which is where he was doing all his work in practice, you know, maybe he would have been better at that once the game started. So I think everything worked out for the best for the Bears. Obviously the injury was unfortunate for Dalton, but I think he was going to start getting in there more anyway against the Bengals. I don't think they wanted to play against the Browns because that pass rush is ferocious. Like we've talked about, it was going to be either week 4, week 5, somewhere around there is when everyone thought that it would be Justin Fields' time. It just happened a little sooner. And, you know, now the Cardinals are coming up on Sunday. If the crack ribs are healed, Nagy said they're going back to Fields. But, you know, I don't want to see him going out there if there's any pain at all. You know, if the crack ribs aren't completely healed, you got to let them sit one more week.
Especially with Chandler Jones.
Jones.
That pass rush. That's, by the way, on the bye week, the Cardinals did not play this week. And
well rested.
They are well rested. And the next opponent, the Green Bay Packers, they're on a bye week this week coming up. And so they will be well rested for the Bears. And those are the two teams that are fighting it out for the number 1 seed in the NFC. So nice schedule makers did a really nice job of really giving the Bears an easy schedule this year. I know most of it's all predetermined, but even like there are some things that do impact just how, you know, good teams are and what spots and whatever. So that's all we have. We will get out of here. I've got an article coming out tomorrow about extending my quarterback rating, passer rating, statistical look. And of course we'll have Bears Over Beers at the end of the week. We will have Bill Zimmerman on his show. Robert will come to you after the game with Bear With Me. You'll have T-Formation Conversation coming out late in the week. So that's the podcast channel. Anything else going on at the website?
You know, Sack Watch. I think there's a few other things. I know Josh Sunderbrunch has something he's working on now about the defense efficiency. I think that's going to come up probably tomorrow at some point. So, you know, we got some cool stuff with analytics, some cool stuff with some play breakdowns. You know, we got everything. It's all at WCG. We have it. We kind of hit the all fields here.
One stop shop. So make sure you're checking that out. Make sure you're checking us out on YouTube if you aren't already. Like, subscribe, comment, all that fun stuff that helps us out. And until next week, we got six of these left, man. Let's find some stuff to cheer for. We'll see you next week and bear down.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.